I'm someone who likes to visit cemeteries, especially the ones with trees and hills, where if you stop and listen, you'll almost always hear the sound of birds singing. I like being in a cemetery with a family when we gather there to return their loved one's body to the earth. And when we do this and gather around the grave, I often begin with this poem by John O'Donohue that sounds like a prayer, words that he wrote after he passed a graveyard one day. And so as I share these words, I invite you to imagine a cemetery that is familiar to you. May perpetual light shine upon the faces of all who rest here. May the lives they lived unfold further in spirit. May all their past travail find ease in the kindness of the clay. May the remembering earth mind every memory they brought. May the rain from the heavens fall gently upon them. May the wildflowers and grasses whisper their wishes into light. May we reverence the village of presence in the stillness of this silent field. If you spent time in a cemetery, haven't you sensed that village of presence there in the stillness of that silent field? This weekend, as our country marks Memorial Day, the invitation is to put ourselves into that place, to reverence those who died fighting for our country, to acknowledge and give thanks for the sacrifices that they made and that their families made, to reverence all the dead that we remember at this time of year. And this is something you can do anywhere, here in church, of course, or at home, or in a cemetery. That's a good place. It's good to take the time to remember those who have died. My wife and I went for a walk on Friday through a cemetery we often walk through, and there were so many people there out trimming grass and planting flowers and cleaning up around graves. It's a great and lovely tradition this time of year. And in this season, with the grass green and growing and the lilacs blooming, isn't it good to cherish the gifts of this good earth and to acknowledge that life is fleeting and that we are meant to love life and to enjoy it while we're here? On Friday, I sent Nate a message saying I was so grateful that he had picked two different versions of America the Beautiful for our prelude and postlude this morning. Because earlier in the week, thinking about what songs or hymns we might sing today, flipping through our hymnals, I realized once again that there are really no hymns for national days in this, our gray hymnal, which came out, I don't know, 20 or so years ago. No America the Beautiful, no Star-Spangled Banner, no national hymn even. Why do you think they were left out? Our previous hymnal, Hymns of the Spirit, has those in them and more. And I have to suppose their omission reflects the ambivalence that some of us feel about patriotic expressions like singing those songs or waving the flag. It's what Diane was speaking to a few minutes ago. If we ever have reservations about the ways our country uses its military power, if we say we are people who are for peace, then is it hypocritical to sing, "And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air gave proof through the night that our flag was still there"? I don't think so. As our national anthem says, our flag, it's our flag. And that means all of us. Doesn't our flag stand just as much for pacifists and protesters as it does for soldiers and sailors, airmen and Marines? That's a point that Barbara Kingsolver makes in the essay that you heard Bill read from a few minutes ago. In that essay, she laments how in times of national crisis, our leaders can wrap themselves in the flag and imply that to speak against our country's policies and actions is somehow unpatriotic. The other night, I went to the premiere of a new documentary about slavery in New England. The fact that there was slavery here, too, and not just in the South, this is mostly ignored and has largely been erased from the telling of our history. The same way a colonial era burying ground for black people in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, was paved over and disappeared from the downtown many years ago, until it was rediscovered about 10 years ago when the Public Works Department was digging up a city street. And to their credit, that street was closed off and now is a memorial park and is beautiful. But the truth is, there has always been a disconnect between the high-minded words we Americans like to use to describe ourselves and the reality of life here in the United States. Our country, founded on the highest ideals of liberty and justice, began with enslaved people being brought here to help build this land. And at the same time, our country also began with women having no voice in our democracy. Sometimes patriotism gets equated with unequivocal support for one's country. America, love it or leave it, those bumper stickers say. My country, right or wrong. But real patriotism calls us to speak up when we see our country going the wrong way. Almost 150 years ago, Carl Schurz, a German-American who was a senator from Missouri, put it this way. He said, "My country, right or wrong, if right, to be kept right, and if wrong, to be set right." The progressive minister William Sloan Coffin said, "There are three kinds of patriots, two bad and one good." He said the bad ones are the uncritical lovers and the loveless critics. The uncritical lovers and the loveless critics. And Bill Coffin said, "Good patriots are those who carry on a lover's quarrel with their country." A lover's quarrel with their country. And there is so much to love about this land of ours, isn't there? Its natural beauty from sea to shining sea. its diversity of people, immigrants from all over the world, making us the world's most religiously diverse nation. Our can-do spirit, our ideal of liberty and justice for all, our willingness to fight and die and send our resources to foreign shores when we think that cause is just. And there are so many ways our country has failed to live up to its promise. Our unwillingness still to tell the truth about the genocide and racism that has been with us from the start. The unequal ways that we and those in power especially have treated our citizens. The way we have used our might to serve narrow interests rather than the greater good. The times we have betrayed our own principles and ideals. It's easy to despair about our country these days, isn't it? Money has corrupted our political process. Our elected leaders seem to be spending more of their time chasing dollars than making laws or, God forbid, hammering out compromise. Cable news and the internet seem to have almost eliminated rational dialogue. We are a divided nation, we are told, and we increasingly see the other side as the enemy, as un-American, some of us say. We are easily led to fear and demonize those who are different, and fewer of us seem capable of understanding nuance and apprehending that most issues are not either black or white. Are things as bad as they seem? The other day I was listening to the radio in the car, and one of the people being interviewed told a story about a summer job he had when he was in college. He went door to door that summer selling books. He said it was a pretty terrible job for him and not a fun way to spend the summer, sent to a strange town where he didn't know anybody. And he said he was not much of a salesman. But what I learned that summer, he said, going door to door, from house to house, was that this country is, by and large, made up of good and decent people. This truth is echoed by Barbara Kingsolver, who began her essay about the American flag by expressing her unease about how the red, white, and blue is sometimes used, and whose husband said, "You can't let the hateful people steal the flag from us." Barbara Kingsolver says, "We're a much nobler country than our narrowest minds and loudest mouths suggest." I believe that too. We need ways to turn down the volume on some of those narrowest minds and loudest voices. What makes the news or lights up the internet is not an accurate portrayal of who we are as a country. In this election year, I believe that we are each called to do our part to help sew back together the fabric of our country. Can we each vow to not use hateful or divisive rhetoric about those that we disagree with, even when we perceive them to be on another side? Can we look for tangible ways to make our hopes and aspirations real, like writing or calling our elected representatives? What an old-fashioned idea. like standing up for what is right and showing up when we can, like at the rally for immigrants next Sunday afternoon. Father Robert Murray, our friend from St. James Parish and the food pantry, says the rhetoric of this campaign season has been frightening and distressing for the parishioners in that congregation who are recent immigrants. This is a chance for us to show up and be friends to those folks from other lands, to say this kind of prejudice and discrimination is not the America that we believe in. In these times of declining incomes and the threat of terrorist attacks, of changing demographics and refugees seeking safety, some folks in our country are afraid and angry. And the two seem to go hand in hand, don't they? Pressure like this can bring out the worst in people, and it can also bring out the best. We need to be asking ourselves, how do I intend to respond? Are we going to reach out, or are we going to retreat? Are we going to build walls or bridges? Not long after the attacks of September the 11th, 2001, the people of Barbara Kingsolver's town came together one day on a baseball field to create a human American flag. About 10,000 people showed up that day and stood out under the hot Tucson sun wearing red, white, or blue, and they were arranged into this big American flag and then photographed from above. That picture soon began to show up everywhere, Barbara Kingsolver writes. But we first saw it on our newspaper's front page. Our family stood in silence for a minute, looking at that stunningly beautiful photograph of a human flag, trying to know what to make of it. Then my teenager, she says, who has a quick mind for numbers and a sensitive heart, did an interesting thing. She laid her hand over part of the picture, leaving visible more or less 5,000 people. And she said, in New York, that many might be dead. We stared at what that looked like. That many innocent souls, particolored and packed into a conjoined destiny. And we shuddered at the one simple truth behind all the noise, which was that so many beloved, fragile lives were suddenly gone from us. That is my flag, Barbara Kingsolver says. And that is what it means. We're all just people together. We honor those who died in service to our country by remembering them and their sacrifice, by living as fully as we can these lives that we have been given, by seeing our fellow citizens, all of them, as beloved and fragile and even beautiful, by finding tangible ways to help our country live up to its creed, liberty and justice for all, by extending our goodwill beyond our borders to the citizens of our wide world. This is my song, O God of all the nations. A song of peace for their land and for mine. Amen.